There's only two things: is great product, great service, right? So your product, when a customer orders, the quality of the packaging, the condition in which it reaches them, has to be spot on, right? You have to give them 100% solid product experience, right? Service is part two. From the moment a person hits your website, places the order, checks out, the communication that they get via email, to the delivery, to them unboxing it, that entire piece has to be, you know, solid.
Hello and welcome to the Startup Operator Podcast. I'm Roshan Karyapa. Arman Sood is the co-founder of Sleepy Owl, which is one of the most popular D2C coffee brands out there. Arman and his co-founders pioneered the concept of the cold brew, have since launched multiple products as well. In this conversation, we speak about what it takes to get started, validating demand, operating in a nascent category, educating consumers about a new brand and product, and scaling a D2C business. This was a fascinating conversation. I hope you like it. Hey Arman, welcome to the Startup Operator Podcast. Thank you so much for making the time.
Thank you, Roshan. Pleasure to be here. After one or two hiccups, I think I'm excited to finally make it happen.
No, as I was saying, you know, founder time is always scarce, and I'm truly grateful, when people make time for this. When you started Sleepy Owl, you weren't looking to start a coffee brand, right? I mean, if I understand, I mean, you were thinking of starting a business, mm-hmm. and you hashed out a few ideas, and Sleepy Owl sort of organically was born around it. Can you take us back to that time and talk about some of, you know, the rules or principles that you had in terms of what kind of business you wanted to run, and, how has that panned out over the years?
Sure. So, Roshan, I think great question. You know, my co-founders and I were, entrepreneurially inclined, and we wanted to take an idea that we were passionate about, execute it, and therefore create value, right? Neither of the three of us are, FMCG, F&B guys. We're not techies. You know, we've come from different professions to get together to start Sleepy Owl. I graduated law school in 2015 along with Ashwajit, and we knew we wanted to be entrepreneurs. And at that point, we didn't have the idea or the bandwidth. So we started working at other startups. I was working at an education technology startup, donning multiple hats. Ashwajit was at Kora Jeans again, donning multiple hats. And Ajay had just come back from his stint at JP Morgan in New York, he'd come back to India, and he was exploring what he wanted to do. Right. The three of us realized that, we want to start something. We didn't know what that something was, but we knew it's something that we would spend the next 5, 10, 15 years doing. Right. And if it was something that we were going to give this kind of time to, it had to be a sector or an industry, A, in which we felt, an interest or a passion, you can call it either. B, it had to fit into sort of our skill sets, right, or what we envisioned we could do. And, when we narrowed it down, we realized F&B is a sector where, we're passionate about it, we're excited, we enjoy it, we want to study it, research it, live it, breathe it, right? It wasn't coffee, it was F&B broadly. So we had multiple ideas in F&B that we explored for a variety of reasons, whether it's scalability, whether it's getting it off the ground right in the beginning, whether it's, getting bored of it too quickly, right? We experienced all of it, and we didn't have an office space. We spent a lot of time working out of the nearby cafes, and I was still working a job at that time, and the coffee in my office was very poor, to say the least. And we realized that there is a gap between, as most office coffees are, yeah. But the problem that we didn't decide to solve, we never decided to solve the office coffee problem, but we realized that it was the in-home coffee market, that there was scope for some disruption in. Cafes were too expensive for us, and we realized that there was a gap in the in-home coffee market, and we just jumped onto this idea and dove straight in, got our hands and feet dirty, and started learning about the coffee industry in the country, and that's how Sleepy Owl happened. It's been 6 years now. Happy to say that we are thriving, existing, and made it through two rounds of COVID and multiple other challenges, which I'll probably share during the course, but happy to be where we are today.
Awesome. So, pretty much everyone has this dream, right, of starting something in F&B. It could be a restaurant, a bar, or some kind of a food brand, right? I mean, the joke is that if you find a board techie in Bangalore, he or she has one or two of these ideas, that they've written down in a notebook or whatever, right? But starting an F&B brand because you are passionate about food is really a naive thing to do, right? Because F&B has so many other complicated elements. It's extremely operations intensive, and you know, building a brand, a customer acquisition, all of that is it's not something like, okay, you have a restaurant and people just walk in, or you build a brand and they will buy it kind of things. So there are plenty of those realizations that happen once you've started up in the F&B space. What are some two or three things that kind of hit you? You know, I mean, what are those things that you hadn't been prepared for at all and that kind of smacked you in your face?
Okay, I mean, I think you're absolutely right. You know, I think for us also, it was slightly naive when we started, you know, saying that, okay, F&B, coffee, we want to get into this space. We have no experience in F&B or FMCG, but we jumped right into it. Now, I think maybe because we have perseverance, we are resilient, we managed to survive and continue to grow and thrive, right? But you're absolutely right. I think number one, without any manufacturing experience or production experience or factory experience to set up an F&B production line, I think it's much easier said than done. You know, once we got into it, we started realizing the challenges in actually running a factory, in actually making sure your product is FSSAI compliant, food safe, legal metrology safe, right? There are tons of challenges, especially if you're manufacturing yourself. And, you know, when we started, there was no third-party manufacturing. It was all done in-house. And to set that up as outsiders was, you know, really, really tough. And that was our first realization that, okay, you know, it's not fun and games. It's not, you know, cafe kholna hai. It's not a dream.
You can't just mix portions in a jar and then like sort of brand it.
I mean, that's what we did when we started. And it worked. It worked for that product for the first 2 years. But as we scaled, as we continued to grow, R&D, quality, safety, these things have proven to be extremely challenging, and we've had to talk to and employ the right resources, the right people to be able to help us execute this as well, right? So that is definitely something that I'd like to, you know, highlight and share. Second is, if you're building a category, if you're doing something novel, new or different, right? If your product and your offering is unique, getting consumers to change their habits and adopt a new way of consumption is no easy feat, man. We were India's first cold brew coffee brand. The time and patience it has taken us to educate India on what cold brew is, what coffee is, how do you go about consuming it in a tea drinking nation, or in a nation where slowly people are adopting, right, new habits. It's been an uphill task, and I feel we've succeeded to some extent to change habits and preferences, but never thought it would be so difficult to convince people to try something. You know, I keep telling people, it's coffee is very much like cigarettes or a certain alcohol, that you are hooked to that taste, you are addicted to it, you like that, and you will only switch if it makes real sense for you to switch to something else. You may try it, and of course we've had a lot of trials, but the challenging bit has been to get customers to stick to your brand, stick to your product, and we've done that through intense innovation, intense packaging innovation, intense product innovation, and maintaining a certain consistency and quality through our journey. Third, and the most important piece, is that we started dreaming to be a direct-to-consumer brand, strictly direct-to-consumer, where our products were only available from our website, and we felt that was the best way to acquire customers, only because your website could be a platform to educate customers, right? Little did we realize that, you know, online consumption in India is growing, but it is far from where ideal, let's say, right? And we are now an omni-channel brand with presence in Horeca, which is hotels, restaurants, cafes, institutions, which is corporates, modern trade and general trade, marketplaces, Q-commerce, and our own website. You know, so we are absolutely stretched across every possible touch point that a consumer may want to buy your product. And that is a reality that we now have to live with, that scaling strictly D2C and is very tough. So those are three things that I could think of, you know, that make it very clear that you can't be a bored techie and dream of an F&B business and just do it, you know. So it's much tougher than that.
Yeah, fantastic. Plenty of threads that, you know, I'd like to pick up on. But, you know, over the last 6 years, of course, I mean, you've understood this ecosystem a lot better, right? So what is this coffee value chain like? If I understand correctly, 90% of our coffee or something like that is exported.
Correct.
Right? So, yeah, how is coffee made? I mean, this kind of a scandalous question asking, you know, that I'm asking because I'm from Coorg. I'm from the hotbed of coffee cultivation in India. But, you know, I do have a very superficial understanding of this. But, you know, what is this coffee ecosystem like, right? I mean, where is it produced? Who consumes it? How is it marketed? How is it sold, etc.?
Perfect. So almost all of India's coffee is grown in Coorg and Chikmagalur and the surrounding regions in Karnataka and on the borders of Karnataka, Chennai, Karnataka, Andhra. And that is where most of our coffee is grown. I would like to acknowledge that there is some coffee growing now in the Northeast, in Orissa as well. And it's picking up, you know, in those regions as well. But primarily coffee is grown in the South. All of India's best quality coffee is exported out because in the West and in other parts of the world, there is a premium that people are willing to pay for good quality Indian Arabica coffee. In India, because historically consumption was not as much or as nuanced, let's say, India's coffee is exported out. Coffee is actually one of the world's, in fact, the world's second most traded commodity after oil. So there's a lot of trading that happens in coffee inter-country, inter-region, right? India, the per capita consumption for coffee wasn't much. So I don't blame or, you know, it's fine that it was all traded out. But it was in, let's say, I would say 2010 onwards is where coffee consumption and consumer habits began to evolve. And there was a demand for good quality coffee in India, right? There were brands that started picking up, you know, great quality coffee, 100% Arabica coffee, and roasting coffee and selling, you know, roasted and ground coffee to consumers in India. When we started Sleepy Owl, we were not convinced that there was enough demand for roasted and ground coffee that consumers would have to brew using equipment, right? We were youngsters ourselves and, you know, we wanted a faster, quicker, more convenient option for coffee. But we were very clear that that convenient option cannot be instant coffee at that point in time, right? Instant coffee was primarily made with Robusta coffee, which is an inferior quality coffee that is used primarily by Nestle, Hindustan Unilever, so on and so forth. Of course, people are used to that taste because they've been having it for decades, right? But is it the tastiest? Is it the best? You know, customer preferences and our insights led us to the answer being no. So we were very clear when we launched, we want to launch with a very differentiated value proposition, a product that doesn't exist, but is freshly brewed and convenient at the same time. So we put this complicated challenge before ourselves and we launched India's first cold brew coffee. And cold brew, just for the audience here, is coffee that is brewed in cold water, unlike, you know, coffee that is traditionally brewed in hot water. So you brew it overnight for a period of 12 to 24 hours and you make a decoction. Cold water brewing actually makes your product less acidic and less bitter than a traditional cup of coffee. And that is what we did. We made India's first cold brew. We packaged it in packaging called as the bag-in-box packaging. And, you know, both the packaging and the product were so unique that we were very easily at that point able to differentiate ourselves from the current offerings in the market, right? And we managed to get eyeballs, we managed to get people to at least try what we were doing. And, you know, simple principle, yeah, you can, only if your product is phenomenal, will people come back again and again. And lucky for us,
yeah.
As you mentioned, right, you take two jars and you make it. Our little decoction that we made at home just worked. You know, people liked it, people bought into it, and we were able to scale from there to where we are today.
Yeah. So once you had this idea, you had to go out and test it, right? And validate if there was actually demand beyond the three or four of y'all. So what was that process like? You know, how did you find the first 20, 30, 40 people? What were the questions you asked them? How do you record their experiences? And, you know, what did you come back to the drawing table and do basically?
Okay. So to be completely honest, and since this is meant to be a candid conversation, we didn't validate it with 30, 40, 50 people in terms of taste, in terms of, you know, what they would think, what they would like. I believe that consumers sometimes don't know what they want, right? And you have to bring it to them and give it to them. And it was only immediate family and a few friends that probably tried the initial versions of the recipes that we would make. But for us, we were very clear that we will make the product, we will package it in its final packaging, and we will launch it in one shot, right? So our hypothesis became that we will sell or we will procure enough material for 1,000 orders, 1,000 units of our product, right? And then we had only one SKU at that time. So the actual launch became our hypothesis, where we said, okay, if we can sell 1,000 units quickly, we have a business on our hand. If not, we don't have a business on our hand, right? And the response to those 1,000 units in real actual setting of people coming and paying for it, right, was phenomenal. We actually sold out very quickly. We got rave reviews and good feedback on our product. And we said, okay, we're going to go all out and put in all our time and energy into scaling this product and therefore this brand. We didn't want to do closed hypothesis, closed testing in any form. Everything happened live, launched in the real world with real customers, real paying people. Of course, the initial sales came from us spamming everybody in our network, friends, family, friends of friends, every Facebook friend that you know I had. Everybody was sent a message saying, please order. And like we managed to get a couple of hundred orders on the first two or three days of launch because people, you know, I guess are supportive and at least our community was supportive of us doing what we were doing. And it just took off from there, man, Roshan. It just something that, you know, it clicked. And
awesome.
And that's when I feel like sometimes you have to go with your gut. You don't necessarily need to rely on too many external factors.
Yeah. No, I do believe that, you know, there is some value in jumping with both feet in, right? Rather than kind of hedging and being a little non-committal in that sense, right? I mean, if you know that your idea is good enough, I think you should at least give it a shot, right? And now, cold brew is, again, you know, not common in India. It's a new concept and you're a new brand. How do you go about educating consumers about this, you know? Because coffee is consumed hot mostly, right? And you're trying to change their behavior. So, what were those things that went into your communication?
So two insights. Yeah, one of our insights was that at least my generation, the generation that grew up in, you know, between 1995 to 2010, right? We were a cold coffee generation, at least as youngsters, right? Cold coffee was popular, and kids our age in that group really enjoyed a good cup of cold coffee, which was essentially instant coffee with milk. And when you go to cafes, even frappuccinos or frappes were quite popular in cafes, right? So with that insight, we said, you know, cold brew may just click, right? Customers may enjoy drinking a cold brew. Cold brew in its nature is also less bitter and less acidic. So for those who didn't drink black coffee because they found it bitter or harsh or were scared of black coffee, cold brew actually solved that problem as well because it's very, very smooth and doesn't taste like a bitter coffee, right? So armed with these insights, we said, okay, cold brew will find a place in the Indian market, right? What we did to ensure we could educate customers is two things. One is go direct to consumer, right? When you're building a category, you need to have a platform where you can actually share information with your customers. Going direct means we had a website, right? We had pages on those websites which really explained what is the cold brew process, how does it work, why you should drink it, all of that. Second is, in the first 2.5-3 years pre-COVID, we focused a lot on events, samplings, promotions, merchandising, etc. That gave us the opportunity to actually talk to our consumers, right? As founders, we led from the front. We would be at all the events, we'd be at all the pop-ups, we'd be at all the stores, making sure that we talk to our consumers and educate them. No doubt, when you are playing in a category or creating a category and educating consumers, it is an uphill battle. It is a long-drawn process, right? To say 6 years from now today, have we succeeded? No. We're still scratching the surface. It may take another 10, another 15, another 20 years before cold brew is absolutely mainstream with the larger population, right? There is enough folks out there that are enjoying the concept of cold brew to keep us going and to keep more brands to come into the space, but far from, you know, being mass scalable or mass premium as well. I remember in 2018 when 2 years from when we launched, Starbucks introduced cold brew at all their locations in India. And we had people tell us, so Starbucks has introduced cold brew, and like, you know, it was for us, it was the best thing that could have happened, right? Because they have so much more reach, so much more scale than we did at the point in time, that more and more customers could now, maybe through them, be educated, learn, in fact, even try their product and then come back to the OG guys and say, okay, this is what cold brew is and enjoy what we are offering.
Yeah. No, that's a great point that you bring up. I think, you know, sometimes competition also makes you a market, right? Because you need multiple brands to really build a category out. You can't have a category of one. So you've added a lot more variants after that, right? I mean, you have the conventional hot brew as well. I think I mistook the hot brew for the instant mix, but I understand it's different, right?
From that.
You also have a bottled brew as well,
absolutely.
Right? So, which again is a whole other dimension, right? Because you're going to be battling for, you know, shelf space, a refrigerated shelf space, which is perhaps the most competitive part of any FMCG distribution as such. What is your thinking on new products? And if you could talk about like you know, what you do differently with these different variants and different products that you have?
So we have three or four principles that we, when it comes to our NPD, right? Sleepy Owl, from the beginning, our goal has been to create products that are convenient, that are easy to use, that are innovative and highly differentiated from what is already in the market. And last but not the very least is they have to be absolutely delicious, right? So we started as a cold brew company. And, you know, our customers, because we're D2C, we talk to our customers, we listen to them, we take feedback very seriously. They wanted a hot coffee product, right? But instead of just giving customers coffee beans or ground coffee, which they had to brew themselves, we said, why not, again, apply the principles of innovation, differentiation, convenience to it. And we were India's first company, and probably, you know, one of the first in the world to put coffee in a tea bag and say, hey, you can actually dip this and it'll get brewed and filtered simultaneously, and therefore you have a cup of black coffee that's ready, right? So we really pushed the boundaries with even the hot coffee, right? The next thing that we did was the ready to drink, right? Like I said, if you go to a retail shelf and you look for a cold coffee, right, other than a Nestle, which is available at a low price point, and then you have Starbucks, which is imported and at a high price point, there was a big gap in the middle. So all product innovation, product creation, you know, happens from two sides. Yeah, one is when the customer tells you that, okay, I need this, right? Or two is when you identify a gap that you can plug into, right? So we created India's first ready-to-drink cold brew. That was with cold brew coffee, a little bit of milk and a little bit of sugar, right? It is absolutely clean label, without any preservatives, without any stabilizers, has a solid shelf life, and at a sort of sweet price point of rupees 100, where it just fits right into, you know, more premium than what was there on the lower end of the segment, and affordable, unlike what was on the higher end of the segment, right? So we just hit that sweet spot. Now, of course, you're right. The shelf space in the refrigerator section is extremely competitive. We didn't realize how competitive it will be, but we knew that there will be value in what we do, and the products are going to add value to the customer. And again, like you said, a category is made when there are multiple brands in that space, right? So why should one or two brands dominate the coffee section of a refrigerated shelf? And there was space for more. And we filled that space in. And again, you know, the response has been phenomenal even to that product.
Yeah. No, I, for one, always check out the refrigerated section in all of these stores, right? I mean, to find out what new brands are out and so on. So yeah. So selling on marketplaces like Amazon and Flipkart, right? I mean, it gives you phenomenal scale. Obviously, you have a ready catchment of customers and so on. But also, I mean, you don't really own the customer, right? I mean, you don't really own their loyalty and so on. And it's a sort of it's a difficult game to sort of play with the algorithm as well. And for a new concept like yours, especially, right? So what has been your experience working with the likes of Amazon or Flipkart or any other marketplaces you're on?
So you're absolutely right. Marketplaces have a catchment of consumers, and consumers prefer shopping from marketplaces sometimes, because I believe they get Amazon is a logistics company at the end of the day, right? Like Q-commerce today is basically logistics. These guys have aced and mastered the delivery experience. And for younger brands, smaller brands, it is very difficult to match that delivery experience, right? So when we get on marketplaces, yes, you have a ready catchment of customers, but you have to also realize then you're not competing with, you know, you're competing with hundreds of brands, not just in your own category, but other categories as well, right? And everybody is vying for attention. So it's much, much more complicated than it seems. In fact, I met someone the other day who said Amazon is like a country, like a government, right? Where there are thousands of people on the inside, and due respect to them. And you need to maintain relationships with your category buyers, with people on the other side, right? So you can leverage the most out of the association, right? Just getting on Amazon and listing your products does not guarantee sales. There have to be interventions in terms of search marketing, in terms of display marketing, and that's how you're able to drive revenue. So yeah, it's been really, really tough on these platforms. It's been great, but it's also been really, really tough. But one should not just assume that, you know, because these platforms exist, your product will sell.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's not trivial by any measure, right? I mean, people often have that one example of, you know, an uncle's uncle, cousin, or someone, you know, who's selling some weird kind of handicrafts or, you know, or some kind of clothes or whatever, and really killing it on marketplaces. But there's a lot of science to it, and it is a lot of burn as well, right?
Absolutely.
So, you know, we've often talked about customer loyalty on the podcast, right? I mean, how do we keep customers coming back? Because it's a new concept. People might think it's novel. They might try it once and then they might forget about it, right? It's not like, you know, this is not habit forming in some sense. It's not like, you know, detergent that I have to buy periodically or sugar or salt or whatever it is, right, that I have to buy periodically. In that scenario, you know, how do you create customer loyalty for a brand like yours? What is the thinking?
So two things. One is, you know, I agree it's not a detergent or sugar or salt, but coffee is addictive, right? So if you manage to get someone hooked on to your taste or your format, right, chances are they may come back, right? And then they may come back again and again. So that's one thing about being in the coffee space that, you know, we're fortunate about. But yeah, goes without saying, Roshan, there's only two things: is great product, great service, right? So your product, when a customer orders, the quality of the packaging, the condition in which it reaches them, has to be spot on, right? You have to give them 100% solid product experience, right? Service is part two. From the moment a person hits your website, places the order, checks out, the communication that they get via email, to the delivery, to them unboxing it, that entire piece has to be, you know, solid, right?
Yeah.
So if product and service together are 10 on 10, that's when you won customer loyalty, right? Having said that, you know, I think it's very important for founders to continuously touch base with their consumers, right? I still, you know, if you were to go on Google right now and type Sleepy Owl and make a phone call, you'd reach me, right? So inevitably, like, you know, 6 years on, I still try as far as possible to take as many calls, talk to as many customers, deal with as many issues. You know, as much as that may suck into my, you know, productive time, I think it's very, very important for us to, you know, keep that human connection on, right? And I think that's really, really helped us, you know, at least win brand loyalty, if nothing else.
Right. How have you seen the consumer interests and consumer purchasing behavior change over the last like 6-7 years, you know, because you talk to these customers on a daily basis. You mentioned some interesting things, right? Like packaging matters, for example. Now, for someone like my dad, he couldn't care two hoots about, you know, what kind of package it came in. I will probably take notice. And then, you know, like my nephew will probably order because of that, right? And again, service really matters, right? Now, how much did, you know, my dad's generation expect from, you know, whatever they bought versus how much I expected versus how much the next generation expects, right? I mean, it's crazy. So I feel like consumers are spoiled for choice today. I mean, consumers are spoiled by the kind of service they get. How have you seen their consumer mindset change and, you know, how their behaviors kind of have reflected that?
So I think, you know, with all due respect and all fairness, it's, you know, if a customer is getting great quality service, and now that great quality service can be, you know, differs and varies from customer to customer. But I think as a brand, you set the standard, right? You want the customer to have a solid experience. You want to communicate well to the customer. You want to live up to the expectations that you set for them, right? So if I'm setting the expectation that my website delivers in 2 to 3 days, then 2 to 3 days it should be. It shouldn't be 4, 5, 6. And if it is, and the customer reaches out to you saying there's a delay, how do you handle that query? How do you respond to the customer? How do you repair that experience for them? What do you do for them? All of that is crucial. I don't think any brand is perfect. I don't think, you know, any business is 100% perfect. But you have to understand that it's all about promise and living up to that promise, right? So it's unfair when you say, okay, this is my promise, but you don't live up to it, right? So you have to, as a brand, be very conscious of the promises you make and then live up to those promises. As much as you say, okay, your dad may not care about the packaging, but you do, right? Again, the brand sets the standard. This is my standard, right? Even if the customer doesn't appreciate it, that's fine, right? But this is what you want to deliver. And then be consistent with that, right? I would rather, you know, get your attention to the packaging, you know, than say, okay, I'll go with an average packaging because maybe your dad doesn't care. I don't think that's fair or that works, right? So you always over deliver, under promise and over deliver. And on consumer habits and preferences and behaviors, I truly think that, you know, we're in the next generation of India where you are, you know, people are exposed to everything that is happening globally. Thanks to social media, thanks to our awareness, thanks to open and transparent communication around the world. We are all aware, we are all in the know of what's going on, what people are consuming, what's cool, what's not, right? So people are a lot more ready to experiment and to try and go for new things and give new things a chance. So that's great to see.
Right. And in terms of the business itself and scaling this business, right? I mean, you've just raised Series A, $6.5 million, right? And I kind of see that scaling D2C is a lot more complex, right? I mean, because it's not a bits and bytes business. It's physical. It's atoms and molecules. You actually have to ship things from one to another. And this whole VC setup with the hyper growth expectation, right? I mean, that can kind of drive you. So how does it pair, you know? I mean, because as much as we talk about quality and being close to the customer and service levels and so on and so forth, the other expectation of like going at breakneck speed, right? I mean, it's just, I mean, it should put a lot of pressure on you, right?
Yeah, it is tough, Roshan, no doubt. I think especially when you are again in a category creation play, right? With most of our products, we're creating categories. We've launched a premium instant coffee, which is, you know, an interesting take on what instant coffee should be like, and we've entered that market, which is an existing category, right? When we, you know, we're playing in that category, put our foot in there as well. I think it's, you know, as you grow, whether breakneck speed or not, right, your fundamentals have to be very clear. You know, you have to be clear on your product, on your offering, on your service, because ultimately in the long run, I don't think anyone will, and if you want to be a brand that lasts for decades and not years, then you have to ensure that principally you're doing the right things. You know, yes, there is an expectation to grow and grow fast, but I don't think it should ever come at the cost of your customer or at the cost of your values or ethics. So no shortcuts, no games, because those things catch up to you. So you got to do things the right way. And I think principally, you know, among the founders and our team, we're very, very clear on our values and how we want to do this. And of course, you know, a part of it is, you know, you look around you and there is so much uncertainty, so much ambiguity in our day to day, right? But I think you've got to, we knew this getting into this journey. So we're prepared for it, and we are continuously preparing for, hoping for the best, preparing for the worst.
Right. And what is your experience of, let's say, venture studios, you know, the Thrasio types of folks, right? I mean, we have Mensa brands and a bunch of them here in India as well, right? Who kind of commit to a shared infrastructure, shared expertise and economies of scale and so on, right? I mean, do they really help individual brands in scaling, and to what degree?
So I'm very, very sure they do. They exist for a reason, right? They definitely help individual brands scale. From what I've heard and who I've interacted with, I think it's definitely, you know, it's good that they exist and what they're doing and how they help entrepreneurs. As of now, it doesn't seem like that's for us, because we're at a scale where I think we, or the trajectory we want to go in, or the path that we want to pursue, right, is slightly different. I think this mostly applies to brands that are larger on Amazon or Flipkart or marketplaces. I think we as a brand are very omni-channel in our presence, and you know, we want to build a strong FMCG business, you know, with a strong modern trade and general trade presence. I think, from my understanding, roll-up commerce is more for digital businesses, and you know, that's my understanding of this.
Right. One of the things that we ask all the entrepreneurs on the podcast is, you know, from everything that you've learned in your business, if someone else were to start up in the same space, what is that 2 or 3 point advice that you would offer to them that could help them not do all of the mistakes that, you know, perhaps you made?
Okay. I'd say, number one, this is not avoid, but do, right? Do have co-founders. I think it's phenomenal when you have people on the journey with you who you have, you know, blind trust on, and that you all can go through the highs and lows together. Are definitely very important. Second is, start building a team early, right? I think we were a little late in building a strong leadership team around us. As founders, we tried doing everything ourselves, and you know, took on roles and challenges, and you wear multiple hats, but sometimes you'd wear the hat the wrong way. So we tried doing too much ourselves. So I think definitely start building a solid team around yourself, because there's only so much you can do yourselves. And number three is, spend more and more time from the very beginning, you know, talking to and spending time with people who are a few years ahead of you on the journey. I think, you know, it's great to learn from other people's mistakes, other people's learnings. And I think for the first, when we started back in the day, I think most other people were starting out with us simultaneously, right? There weren't too many D2C brands or young FMCG startups. I think it all started together about 6, 7, 8 years ago. So I think now, for people starting out now, like, feel free to reach out to me if I have anything to share, if you have anything that you feel I could do. But reach out to anyone and everyone. I'm very confident. And that's what we do now. We talk to other founders, you know, other entrepreneurs, other operators and just try and learn and understand what's working and what's not. Because, you know, we all win or we all lose. I think it's one large ecosystem and that we should all push each other and help each other grow.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Before we let you go, what are some books or podcasts that you would recommend?
Okay, books, I would definitely recommend two books. One is Shoe Dog by Phil Knight, and one is Beyond Entrepreneurship by Jim Collins. These are two books I would recommend for sure. And the podcast, without saying, it's the NPR podcast with Guy Raz, How to Build This.
That's
my favorite podcast. Done a lot of podcasts with a lot of people, but somehow, man, nothing competes with his voice and his ability to get the best out of people.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I mean, he is like the platinum standard for all podcasters, right? I mean, the production quality, the way he's able to sort of choreograph the conversation and so on. I think, he is just inimitable. Yeah. And, a recent episode that I caught of this lady who started a cookie shop. I mean, it's a very famous one. I mean, I forget the name. She started this cookie shop in the 70s and sold it for something like $500 million, a few years ago, right? Phenomenal.
I heard that as well. I don't recall the name either, though.
Yeah. Tate's Cookies, I think. Yeah, Tate's Cookies. That's right. So, yeah, fantastic. Hey, Arman, thanks again for making the time for this. I really enjoyed our conversation. A lot of insights that, our audience will find value in. And all the best for everything that you have coming up.
Thank you so much, Roshan. Pleasure being on the podcast with you. And to all the listeners, I think, please try Sleepy Owl. I'm pretty sure you'll enjoy it and your experience. And I really look forward to feedback. And please do get in touch and also spread the word with friends and family.
Awesome. We'll link to all of the good stuff in the description and show notes. Thank you again, Arman.
Thank you. Have a great day. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening. If you liked this episode, then don't forget to subscribe to us on your favorite platform and share this episode with all of your fellow startup operators. Also, follow the Startup Operator on LinkedIn and Twitter for more updates. Stay safe, take care, and see you soon on a brand new episode of the Startup Operator.